Welcome to the Whispering Gallery podcast. Thanks for stopping by the information desk. Are you here for the Fairy Tale Salon? Yes, oh good. Tonight we have a sampler of heroines and grimm, if you will. Fairy tale secrets to shine your flashlight on. Simply follow the shadow-draped hallway down to the plush pine-green velvet curtains. To get through, find the middle of the curtains, always a bit of a challenge with drapery, right? But at least you'll arrive with some panache when you make it through, like a French revenant returning to your WGP friends and family. The fairy tales from the collection of Mother Goose, Old Wives' Tales, favorited 17th century style, gathered and curated for salon reading in France by Charles Perrault, prepared to be read in salon during the early Enlightenment, each with a moral for the comments and conversation at the end of each tale, like today's social media. The salons were the civilized thinkers, teaspoon stirring the teacup, or stirring the pot, before the French Revolution of 1789. I entreat you to join me for more of the less familiar fairy tale realm during this age of fairy tale gathering in France, Germany, and beyond. Once you've found your favorite teacup, mug, or travel mug, add your favorite bag of dead leaves, or tea bag, and steep it in hot water, add 2 to 3 cookies to your saucer, and add a flower to your bud vase. Now, give your damask cloth napkin a flourish and your trusty old flashlight a quick check, and we'll join the conversation together in the Whispering Gallery Salon for the rest of our story. Welcome to part 2 of Midnight Mother Goose. Welcome to our new WGP listeners across the US and to our international listeners. Thank you wherever you are for listening and having faith that Americans are just as shocked as you are at what's been going on. To all of WGP listeners and friends, I'm glad you're exploring these stories with me. Very glad to have your company walking through the shadowy realm of art mysteries. Tonight, we'll get started at the Rhine River, which marks the border between France and Germany, like the filling of a Spitzbuben, raspberry-filled sandwich cookies with little heart windows cut out of the top. The Rhine River being the jam separating the two cookies, or countries, in our strange story of fairy tales. So how far is it really from France across the Rhine to Germany, and to the edge of the Schwarzwald Black Forest? Think about 4 to 5 city blocks from where you're standing. You can see the riverbank on the other side. Another way you might be able to picture it is to think about it as the distance of a lap around a running track. Once in the Black Forest, you'll find there's more than one way to get through the dense shadowy pines, like through the tunnels of the Black Forest Railway, Schwarzwaldbahn. Schwarzwaldhochstrasse, or the Black Forest High Road, B500. The German clock route, yep, cuckoo clocks. The Black Forest cake route, not to mention the Black Forest treetop walkway and spiral slide, as cool as it sounds. Notice that knocking noise? Too quick for Sasquatch knocks, right? But nearby and loud enough to make you wonder who's making it. Woodpeckers. You might also hear a robin, and underfoot there's plenty of moss, ferns, and mushrooms. Beware of the charming but poisonous pink foxglove with bell-shaped flowers. And don't touch the fire salamander. It's black with yellow markings. The gloom cast in the Black Forest is from a combination of deciduous trees. That's the color-changing ones in, like, beech and oak in the fall. But more from spruce, silver fir, and the majority, Scots pine trees. And glimpses of cherry tree blossoms in orchards during the spring. The forest is taking some rough blows from storms, but with help has recovered. But we're not staying in the dappled light of the Schwarzwald. As wonderful as it is, we're heading out of the Black Forest and into the middle of Germany to follow the fairy tale route. That's a thing? It's a thing. On the way out of the Black Forest, we might take the German clock route and stop by the House of 1000 Clocks and see the Triberg Waterfalls while we're there. Or we could hop on the Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte Trail, Black Forest cake route, for a taste of the famous cake. Did you know that authentic cakes require Kirschwasser? That's cherry brandy. It's the law. So what is this torta, aka gâteau? A torta is more of a normal cake. A gâteau is something extra special. Imagine layers of chocolate sponge cake, brushed with cherry brandy, layered with whipped cream and cherries, and topped with dark chocolate. Wow, that would be pretty rich. With waterfalls, very old trees, castles, chocolate, cherries, clouds of whipped cream, and walls of cuckoo clocks. Well, there are a lot of things we don't want to miss. We might just want to hunker down and enjoy, right? Not if we want to uncover more of the unknown. Vor die Mitternacht, vor die Muttigans, Midnight Mother Goose, Episode 2. Just loving using a little wee bit of German thanks to the Frau's in middle school and high school. There is, of course, a German fairy tale route, and there's a very cool map with illustrations by Marcus Lefrancois, a German illustrator and graphic designer who studied at the Kassel School of Art and Design. Kassel, that's where the Grimms lived. He has an exhibition listed at Grimmwelt and a couple of very grim, fairy tale-sounding publications in his portfolio. If you want to get your own copy of the fairy tale route map, you can order one of these for free to study, daydream, or plan your own trip at www.deutercheinstrasse.com/en/route/our-route. And of course, I ordered one. The memory of Perrault's Mother Goose collection is still fresh from part one. But we're hitting the road. We're going to be following a smidgen of the fairy tale route in Germany to find the Grimm brothers. Where did all of their 210 stories come from? Did you also hear that they created the collection of fairy tales by combing the countryside, gathering stories as oral history from peasants? That's what I had understood. So I was pretty surprised to learn that over 50% of the stories were actually collected from educated women, some who were their neighbors and family, middle class, and even aristocrats. Dorothea Weimann, Huguenot background, while not as well-to-do as their other sources, she was not a peasant farmer as represented. She was literate and spoke two languages, French and German. Dorothea's dad had been an innkeeper, and she had heard stories while growing up. Later, when her husband passed and she was a widow, she was still supporting her 5 daughters at home, plus her grandchildren. So she sold vegetables at the market and also had to pay French taxes from the occupation in Kassel. She was also working with the Grimm brothers, who were focused on her humble situation rather than her literate background. The brothers gave her little luxuries she couldn't afford at that time, and sometimes paid her money for the stories. From Claire Pollard in The Modern Fairies, autumn has come. bringing its blood-drop berries, its acorns and walnuts, its spider's webs. The sap is falling as the trees draw their nutrients back inside, readying themselves for their long, enchanted sleep. Whilst their leaves, which in their youth were simply green, each seemed to become unique in their last hours, blotched, spotted, blush-tipped, pocked, crinkled, the colors of gingerbread, bearskin, pumpkin, ram's fur, porridge, a blood-stained key. I spent one of my research sessions getting lost in the depths of the Goodreads fairy tale section of their pull quotes database. While Luna, our foster, mini dachshund, Kaninchen, very small. Kaninchen translates from German to English to rabbit, and at first I wondered if that was because of their size. But there are rabbits bigger than they are. They were bred to flush rabbits out of burrows. I mean, yes, on the sassy scale, they could do it. I thought I knew fairy tales, but they seem to belong to the shadow-dappled realm of, at the very least, hard to figure out why they made the choices that they did. From bad guys to the heroes. The fairy tales I've been reading while researching this story are not at all what I've been conditioned to believe this genre to be about. Magic, fairy godmothers, poison apples, all on the way to happily ever after. Here we are with Gustav, Mr. Prolific. In 1862, Gustave Doré illustrated 9 of Charles Perrault's 11 tales, including Cinderella, or The Little Glass Slipper, The Sleeping Beauty in the Wood, Little Red Riding Hood, The Master Cat, or Puss in Boots, Bluebeard, The Fairies, Ricky of the Tuft, Little Thumb, and Donkey Skin. In fact, if you go to commons.wikimedia.org and plug Contes de ma mère l'oeil, Gustave Doré, into the search bar, you'll find plenty of his illustrations to peruse. And how would one spell that? It's C-O-N-T-E-S D-E M-A, let's do it with spaces, C-O-N-T-E-S space D-E space M-A space M-E-R-E space L apostrophe O-Y-E. Gustave Doré is spelled G-U-S-T-A-V-E, last name D-O-R-E. Gustave was one of those artists who didn't need to draw from life or reference. Is that like being able to sit down at the piano and play anything? I mean, that just didn't seem fair as somebody that had to practice. But actually, yes, it is like that. By the age of 5, he could draw detailed illustrations, and it sounds like his eidetic memory was recognized early. It sounds like photographic memory is considered a myth, but eidetic memory is a thing that occurs in childhood and fades with age, already rare. But it seems like Gustav retained his ability. Gustav illustrated The Raven by Poe, The Bible, The Tempest by Shakespeare. I'll stop while we're ahead. He created 10,000 illustrations. From Wikipedia, they describe him as a, quote, French printmaker, illustrator, painter, comics artist, caricaturist, and sculptor. He is best known for his prolific output of wood engravings illustrating classic literature, unquote. Gustave Doré was known for creating a drawing as quickly as in one evening. But this wasn't the end of things. Each drawing created work for a team of master engravers, like the elves and the shoemaker. He drew onto hard boxwood blocks using relief, where areas are carved out to be raised above the background. The raised areas are inked. There are actually some very charming gingerbread cookie molds designed to print and reprint in 3D. You can find these on Etsy. And I usually have them in my shopping cart throughout December, kind of mooning over them. Like the shoemaker's workbench, instead of elves finishing the work, a hidden workshop, i.e. studio, with a team of master wood engravers, each with their specialty, like working on just the sky or the forest. Sometimes 10 magic and masterful engravers, other times up to 40, carved Doré's dramatic drawings into wood to be printed and reprinted. Like the elves, their industrious work might have been undetectable, as so many jobs are, but for their names tucked almost invisible into the scenes. If this is setting off memory bells, you may be thinking of the episodes about Yoshitoshi, who also worked with a team to complete his designs on woodblock prints. It's Season 3, Episodes 9 and 10, Yoshitoshi's 36 Ghost Stories. So, Gustave Doré, 1832 to 1883, created illustrations that were carved into woodblocks by engravers in Europe, while in Japan, Tsukioka Yoshitoshi, 1839 to 1892, also worked with master carvers and printers, both bringing their stories to life through their illustration and design, with the help of their art teams, working quietly behind the scenes to make the magic happen. By the time Gustave was 15 and moved to Paris to begin his life as an illustrator, Tsukioka would have been 8 years old. They were alive at the same time, using similar techniques. Let's make a rest stop on the Fairy Tale Road of the Whispering Gallery podcast and check out sea monsters really quick. I know we're inland, so how does this relate? It does, because Gustave did a wood engraving illustration of the Leviathan, a black and white print of a sea monster slithering, sliding, and coiling at the bottom of the illustration in a turmoil of seawater. I'd seen it before, but didn't realize it was a religious print. It's from the Bible, for Isaiah chapter 27, verse 1. From the English Standard Version of the Bible, quote, "In that day the Lord with his hard and great and strong sword will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent. Leviathan, the twisting serpent. And he will slay the dragon that is in the sea." Unquote. Sea monsters? Think Carta Marina, old maps of the sea that are home to illustrations of sea monsters. My Shower Curtain is a lovely cartoon filled with characters of sea monsters. If you need this in your life, check out calamityware.com. And oh boy howdy, we may have a topic we need to explore in another episode. In the meanwhile, you can get more sea monster vibes with the episode of The Kraken. From Theodora Goss in Red as Blood and White as Bone, quote, "Fairy tales are another kind of Bible for those who know how to read them," unquote. That was a rather ambitious comparison. Oof, fairy tales and the Bible. And our Gustave, he illustrated both. And this is from Father Brown. You may have heard of him on PBS, by G.K. Chesterton. Quote, "It is possible that God says every morning, quote, do it again, unquote, to the sun, and every evening, do it again, to the moon. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never got tired of making them. Unquote. Perrault and the Grimm's stories don't exactly fit the mold for present-day animated fairy tales, which are extra carefully curated and kid-friendly. When storytellers have dipped their pen in these stories for inspiration, there's had to be some parts cut and left on the floor, or put in the round file. Fairy tale worlds originally were filled with shadows, improbability, criminals, murderers, cannibalism, evil intent, not exactly rated G. The fairy tales originally came from a gritty inkwell, right? And the ink didn't always flow to deliver a happily ever after. Good didn't always prevail. Sometimes weird problems ended badly. Bad choices were made. A rusty nib on old, wrinkled, dry paper recording the stories that broke the rules of etiquette and polite society, not to mention the laws of the land and tossing aside the way we've been taught to behave since we were very young. Kindness. Golden rule. Doesn't matter to the witch in Hansel and Gretel. Now, we were going to talk about heroines in this episode. They're still all here in my notes. But I think we should talk about Arthur Rackham first, since we just gave a lovely overview to the prolific one, Gustav, one of the illustrators of the Mother Goose tales. If you're like me, you may have heard fairy tales are very dark, and think, I remember that one. That was so good in remembering the good parts. Sleeping Beauty, for instance, princess in an induced coma. Rumpelstiltskin and the Miller's Daughter, bad decision puts her firstborn at risk. Things people wouldn't really do. But maybe on CSI or Dateline, you might hear of stories. Really? We hear that fairy tales are dark all of the time. But what about the magic making? Cinderella's coach from a pumpkin. Changing reality for hours at a time. The magic of true love's kiss, breaking spells of sleep and comas. We started out reading Perrault's Red Riding Hood. The Grimms dropped the moral that he had added. From Lainey Taylor in Strange the Dreamer, quote, as for fairy tales, he understood that they were reflections of the people who had spun them and were flecked with little truths. Intrusions of reality into fantasy, like toast crumbs on a wizard's beard. Unquote. Drawing on pillows. Did you read under the covers after going to bed as a kid? Do you still? You're not alone. I listened to the radio more often, lights were off, nobody hassled me. I'd listen to old radio shows like The Shadow. Arthur Rackham, born in 1867, and one of the Grimm's fairy tale illustrators living in Britain, when his paper was taken away, not books or radio podcasts, when he was a child, Arthur would take out his pencil and draw on his pillows. What was the first sign he'd be an artist? Was it the linen? It was the linen. I bet it was the pillowcases. Dead giveaway. At 33, Arthur illustrated fairy tales of the Brothers Grimm with 99 black and white line drawings and a color illustration for the front. By 1909, he revamped the drawings to 40 colored illustrations. 31 are on Wikimedia Commons. And 55 line drawings working from behind his gold-rimmed spectacles. The final 1857 edition of the Brothers Grimm collection, Kinder und Hausmärchen, Children's and Household Tales, contains 211 tales. Remember Peter Pan? Yep, he illustrated The Little White Bird, Peter's intro, and then Peter Pan in Kensington Gardens. Tink was not all bad. Okay, quote from J.M. Barrie in Peter Pan. Quote, Tink was not all bad. Or rather, she was all bad just now, but on the other hand, sometimes she was all good. Fairies have to be one thing or the other, because being so small, they unfortunately have room for one feeling only at a time. They are, however, allowed to change. Only it must be a complete change. Unquote. Got a couple other Peter Pan ones just because they all go so perfectly together and fit right in. Okay, this one is from J.M. Barrie, Peter Pan in Kensington Gardens. Quote, it is frightfully difficult to know much about the fairies. And almost the only thing for certain is that there are fairies wherever there are children. Unquote. We're back to Peter Pan with J.M. Barrie. Quote, of all the delectable islands, the Neverland is the snuggest and most compact. Not large and sprawly, you know, with tedious distances between one adventure and another, but nicely crammed. When you play at it by day, with chairs and tablecloth, it is not the least alarming. But in the 2 minutes before you go to sleep, it becomes very nearly real. That is why there are nightlights. Unquote. And the last quote from Peter Pan and J.M. Barrie, quote, he would come down laughing over something fearfully funny he had been saying to a star. But he had already forgotten what it was. Or he would come up with mermaid scales still sticking to him, and yet not be able to say for certain what had been happening. It was all really rather irritating to children who had never seen a mermaid. Unquote. Arthur's Alice in Wonderland, Queen of Hearts, reminds me of Yubaba and Spirited Away by Studio Ghibli, written and directed by Hayao Miyazaki. Really exaggerated nose. Really. And features. Arthur brought us the supernatural world with elegant, delicate fairies, thoughtful, strange goblins, and ghosts. Arthur also illustrated for Poe. Poe's Tales of Mystery and Imagination. On August 21 of 2018, Kerry Gibbons wrote from a horrific design on Copper Hewitt, Smithsonian Design Museum. That would, if you want to go look it up, it's at copperhewitt.org. Quote, Rackham's designs exquisitely capture the mystery, madness, and horror associated with Poe, leading the artist to declare that the illustrations, quote, were so horrible I was beginning to frighten myself, unquote. This was from Beloved Enchanter, pages 10 and 11. He also illustrated Midsummer's Night Dream, The Tempest, and Fairy Tales by Hans Christian Andersen, and for companies like Colgate and Cadbury. His last completed work was Wind in the Willows. He died in the same month he was born, on September 6, 1939. His obituary in the Times, a London newspaper, shared that he was, quote, one of the most eminent book illustrators of his day, unquote, with, quote, a special place in the hearts of children, unquote. He had illustrated 60 books and created over 3,300 illustrations. He is known today as one of the foremost illustrators, the golden age of children's book illustrations, combining ink with watercolor as his medium of choice. And there's a great website. You can go to illustrationshistory.org/artists patreon.com/arthur-reckham. Now, Damon Thomas, from a Southern Gothic children's book, a rural gloom graphic novel, reads, quote, "When I was a kid, I had an illustrated, quote, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, unquote, book, a yard sale non-Disney version that was already vintage. The dwarfs had no names, but got along well, all sharing the same bedroom, sleeping in a row of beds with their feet out from the covers. Because of this, I started sleeping with my feet uncovered as well, and now as an adult, it is still the same. Feet out, even as it gets cold. We are what we read." Unquote. Stay tuned for part 3 on Midnight Mother Goose, coming soon. Thank you for joining me for this strange story tonight. I hope you will subscribe so you catch future episodes of The Whispering Gallery. Please consider leaving a review. It is one of the ways I get feedback, and I have heard it really helps the podcast to be found by others. The Whispering Gallery podcast is written and produced by me, Suzanne Nicolaisen. Copyright Suzanne Nicolaisen, 2026. All media was used under the protection of fair use. You can support the podcast by volunteering or donating. Links are at thewhisperinggallerypodcast.com. The score for the podcast is Spellcraft, provided by Jeff Harvey on Pixabay. Remember to keep your flashlight close and your spooky art stories closer when visiting the Whispering Gallery. Take care.